Welcome to Island Crimes and Mysteries. And now, it's time to join your host, Newells, for another episode.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me today, and if you're a returning listener, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, welcome. It's great to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started on today's story.
If you have any heart, please just come forward and put us at rest. Because it's just getting harder as the years go on. I just want closure for my mum, good or bad. To be quite honest with you, in my heart, I do feel that I'm not going to find her alive. But if that's the case, we just want to put her to rest with my dad. And I just plead, you know, please come forward. We don't care who you are. You can come anonymously. You know, via email, you can message me through the Missing Esra Facebook. But somebody knows and somebody needs to just say, yes, I've seen, I've heard. I don't know how much more strength I've got to carry on. Because it just kills me every time I come over here and I do the same thing.
Today's case again takes us to Ireland's capital city, Dublin, but more specifically to the suburbs and an area called Clondalkin. This is where our story begins. Clondalkin is approximately 10 kilometres west of the city centre and has a population of nearly 48,000. A focal point of Clondalkin is its 8th century round tower, which is one of only four remaining towers of its kind in County Dublin. Two prisons are in the vicinity of Clondalkin, Wheatfield Prison and Cloverhill Prison. Grange Castle Business Park is also nearby and houses such companies as Google, Amazon and Microsoft. Later in our story, we will then head to the small coastal town of Bray in North County Wicklow. Bray is approximately 20 kilometres south of Dublin city centre. With a population of over 33,500, it is home to Ardmore Studios, where lots of blockbuster films are made, including Braveheart and Breakfast on Pluto. Bray is a popular holiday resort, and a popular activity for people is the 7 kilometre cliff walk from Bray out over Bray Head to Greystones, which takes in magnificent views out over the harbour. Some famous people have also called Bray home, including the late singer Sinead O'Connor, world champion boxer Katie Taylor and writer James Joyce, to name but a few. On the 23rd of February 2011, a 38-year-old lady named Ezra Irwin left her house, which was located in the Collinstown Grove area of Clondalkin, Dublin, in her grey Renault Twingo, registration number 08D23067, at approximately 7:15 a.m. She had told her husband, Oscar, that she was just dropping out to the local shop, which was about a 5-minute drive away in Neilstown, to get some essentials like bread and milk. That morning, Oscar had decided he would go to the gym on his way home from work and told Ezra he would take the car, which was the family car, on her return from the shops and go to work and head to the gym after. Normally, Ezra would drive Oscar to work and pick him up after so she wouldn't be without a car for the day. Oscar started preparing for the day ahead while Ezra went to the shop, telling her husband as she left she wouldn't be that long. Their 2-year-old son was still asleep when she left. As it was a cold, dull day, Ezra didn't want to have to be walking to the shop with her son, so while she had the car, she decided to get what she needed. Ezra Irwin was born on the 1st of March 1972 into a very loving family, the youngest of 3 siblings, having an older brother and an older sister called Berna. Ezra was 7 years younger than her sister Berna and looked upon her as a second mother. The two were extremely close. Ezra is a British citizen of Turkish descent. She was described by those who knew her as a very friendly and outgoing lady with a spirited personality. While living in London, Ezra worked in a pathology lab, and it was while working there she met her husband, Oscar Irwin. Their romance blossomed and they would go on to marry. Having secured a better paying job, Oscar moved his wife from London to Dublin in 2007. They had been living in Clondalkin for 4 years by February 2011. Ezra didn't want to move at first as she was so close to her family, her sister Berna saying she was very reluctant initially. But in the end decided it was best for the family's future. But they didn't rule out a return to the UK at some point. Everything was so positive in Ezra's life at this point. After her son was born, Ezra joined the local mother and baby group and began to make even more friends. People found her very personable and friendly. As Oscar's job paid well, they decided Ezra would be a stay-at-home mother to cut down on childcare bills. Life continued as normal until in October 2010, Ezra's dad would pass away. This devastated Ezra, who would make several visits home in the ensuing months to be near her family while they grieved. In January 2011, Ezra asked her mother if she would like to come and stay with her in Dublin for a while, thinking it would be good for her mam to have a change of scene, as she was not in the best of health generally and the passing of her husband had taken its toll. Plus, Ezra wanted to spend more time with her mother. Because her mother was a nervous flyer, she also invited her mother-in-law. It would be company for her mam on the journey, and it would be nice to see her and spend time with her as well. They were due to arrive on the 24th of February. Ezra had excitedly booked the tickets and even rang her sister to get a few spices she had forgotten to buy on her last trip to London to send with her mother. 2 days before their arrival and 1 day before she disappeared, Ezra bumped into a neighbour while putting out the bins. This neighbour said that she was in very high spirits, looking forward to her mother's visit. There was no sign Ezra was downbeat or had any indication of what was to come. But everything was about to change for Ezra and her family the following day, February the 23rd, 2011. On reflection, according to those who knew Ezra best, there was no indication that she would disappear. Yes, she was grieving the loss of her dad, but it was grief, not depression. There were no signs to indicate it was anything else. In fact, Ezra was very happy and upbeat and looking forward to her mother's visit. She was busy in the days leading up to her disappearance, getting organised for her mother and her mother-in-law's arrival. She had asked her mother to stay for a month and so was making lots of plans. Her mother's visit coincided with her own birthday, so she had also planned a spa day and dinner to celebrate. So when there was no sign of her returning from the shop in a timely manner that morning, Oscar started to get worried. He first contacted the Gardaí. Ezra was described as being 5'5" and of slim build with blonde highlighted hair, green eyes and a tanned complexion at the time of her disappearance. She left the house wearing black leggings, a dark top and a black or denim jacket and white Nike runners. After contacting the Gardaí, Oscar also contacted Ezra's family back in the UK. Her sister Berna took the flight originally meant for her mother as she wanted to get to Ireland and find out what was going on for herself. Ezra's car would be found in Bray at 11 p.m. that same night she disappeared in the car park overlooking the ocean and beside the walk to Bray Head. The area where her car was found was an approximate 30-minute drive from her house in Clondalkin. When Berna arrived, she spoke to the Gardaí, who asked her about the possibility that maybe Ezra was depressed and had took her life out at Bray Head. Berna, knowing her sister, did not agree with this hypothesis. After all, Ezra was in good form, life was normal, and with her mother's impending visit, there was lots to look forward to. Yes, she was devastated over her dad, but as Berna would later say, despite being so grief-stricken by his passing, there was no way Ezra would ever leave her young son. Searches began immediately, covering both land and sea. The car was forensically searched and nothing out of place was found. But in the boot, they did find Ezra's wallet with €60 in cash in it, as well as her bank cards and her driver's license. The Gardaí surmised that she may have put her wallet in the boot for safekeeping while she went for a walk out towards Bray Head. If this was the case, it disputes the hypothesis that Ezra may have taken her own life. Why would she go to the bother of concealing her wallet in her boot for safekeeping if she had no intention of returning? The suggestion that Ezra took her own life, as I said, is strongly refuted by her family. Ezra's car was parked right beside the beginning of the walk to Bray Head. This is an extremely popular walk, taking in stunning views over the mountains and out to the sea. It is steep, with a lot of sheer drops from rugged cliff faces along the way, and sadly people have been known to use this area for the purpose of ending their lives. But finding her car there only reinforced to Berna her belief that something sinister had happened to her sister when she left the house, as opposed to driving out to Brayhead and taking her own life. If she did take her own life, why was her body never found? Plus, why would she invite her mother over and make all these plans and do this the day before she was due to arrive? Her family have always been firm in their belief that Ezra would not take her own life. After all, they knew her best. Ezra had lots of plans for the future, including hopefully moving home to London at some point to be closer to her family, whom she adored. So why did a 3-minute journey end up taking 35 minutes? What was the delay? Where was Ezra in the intervening time? Her car was then picked up arriving in Bray on CCTV after the owner of the Star Amusement Arcade, which was adjacent to the car park, noticed Berna on the wall every day and offered up his CCTV for analysis. It felt like a breakthrough initially, but the footage was so grainy when examined that it was impossible to make out who was driving the car. A bitter disappointment. Footage captures the car passing the amusement arcade camera and then disappearing out of view. Then it reappears, coming back in the same direction after leaving the car park. This is unusual, given that it is a one-way system along the Strand in Bray. After analysing other camera footage, her car is then later captured coming out from Convent Road, emerging onto the Strand again. As it enters the Strand Road, it is in a near collision with a red Skoda Octavia. Ezra's car is seen pulling out in front of the Octavia before braking fast and pulling in behind it and tailing it at speed. The driving of Ezra's car has been described as erratic. Her family found this footage bizarre, as they said Ezra was a very cautious driver and would never drive in a manner seen on the camera footage. It then pulls back up into the car park and parks up out of view of any cameras where it was later found. Despite all this footage, there is no physical evidence that Ezra herself was ever in Bray, despite the fact her car was.
This is where
the car was found?
Yes, yeah.
But there is still no proof that she actually came here herself?
No, the car didn't drive itself there.
No.
Somebody drove the car there. Fortunately, we have CCTV. Unfortunately, we cannot enhance it. But anyway, look it. There is a female seen getting out of where the car had been parked and walking up towards the head.
Then more footage was released later by Gardaí of a lady that they thought resembled Ezra exiting the car park and walking along the path to Bray Head. This person later stops and looks back a few times before continuing up the path. This footage has a timestamp on it some 2 hours after Ezra's car entered the car park and parked up. Again, the footage is grainy, but Berna does not think it is her sister Ezra. She said the person in the footage to her is clearly not Ezra, and she maintained this lady was simply walking her dog. As a small dog appears in the footage walking behind the lady, and it does look like this woman pauses and looks back simply to ensure her dog is following. Berna is confident this is not Ezra.
That's not her. We've seen that clip.
You've seen that, yes.
Yeah. We've seen that clip, and we watched it over and over again. If you actually watch it very carefully, there's a little tie, something crosses, and it's a little dog that as soon as the dog passes her, she turns and starts walking after it. She was walking her dog.
That's my interpretation.
Yes. That's why, you know, when it comes as far as here, and I'm thinking, well, the car's here, but does she ever actually get here herself?
Mobile phone data shows that Ezra's phone last pinged at the far side of Brayhead, but the phone has never been found. There was no new leads in the months ahead and the case started to go cold. 1 year on from when Ezra first went missing, Berna was back in Ireland putting up missing person posters around the Clondalkin area when a shopkeeper approached her saying he had Ezra's keys, which included the key to her car. He showed the keys to Berna, and there on the key ring was a photo of Ezra with her husband and son, confirming that these were indeed her keys. He went on to tell Berna that someone had left them on the counter at his fish and chip shop during the Christmas period. He had held them in safekeeping in case whoever left them there would return to collect them. He eventually realised that the keys belonged to the missing Ezra, but astonishingly, he decided to hold on to them and not hand them into the Gardaí. Instead, he said he wanted to wait and meet Berna in person to hand over the keys, as he was aware she made very frequent visits to Ireland to keep Ezra's disappearance alive in people's minds, in the hope it would generate a new lead. Because he did not hand the keys into the Gardaí, several months had elapsed, so any CCTV footage from the takeaway and surrounding areas was already deleted. So it remains a mystery who left the keys on the counter. This takeaway is approximately a 30-minute drive from where her car was found in Bray. So instead of helping with the investigation, it only adds to the mystery. Whoever drove the car to Bray would obviously have needed the keys to drive the car there. So how did the keys end up back in Clondalkin? And who brought them back? For her family, it also reaffirms their belief that she did not go to Bray to take her own life. Because if she did, how did her car keys end up back in Clondalkin in close proximity to her home? Berna flies from London to Dublin every single year to appear for any information to help find her beloved sister. In between, she makes trips if any new information or sightings are reported. Unfortunately, none of these have led anywhere, and sometimes false sightings have been reported. In May of 2018, Ezra's disappearance would be back in the headlines, after a man known in the media as the Beast of Bray abducted and murdered a woman named Justine Valdez, who was an accountancy student. Justina also worked as a care attendant and in a local cafe in Bray. This abduction happened in broad daylight. He was later tracked down by Gardaí. His name was Mark Hennessy, and he was later involved in a standoff with the Gardaí and would be killed by a ricochet bullet in Cherrywood Business Park. Justine's remains would later be found in Woodland area in South Dublin. I will be covering Justine's case in a later podcast. But psychologists believe, based on Mark's profiling, that this was not his first offence. Berna has requested the Gardaí to investigate him to see if he had anything to do with Ezra's disappearance. But to date, this has not happened. And the Gardaí have not stated if he could be linked to Ezra's disappearance. Another murder that piqued the interest of Gardaí, as it bore some similarities, was that of Elaine O'Hara, who was murdered by Graeme Dwyer in 2012. Her skeletal remains were found in the Dublin Mountains in September 2013. Again, I will cover this case in a future podcast. Initially, Gardaí were under the assumption that Elaine had ended her own life, but it soon became apparent that this was not the case when a plastic bag containing odd items like handcuffs, clothing and restraints were found in the Vartry Reservoir near Roundwood, County Wicklow, after a particularly hot spell of weather had caused the water levels to drop. The items were handed into the local Garda station, which prompted the Gardaí to further investigate the reservoir, where they found more handcuffs, a mask, a knife and a keyring with a Dunn Stores loyalty card on it. This was later identified as belonging to Elaine O'Hara, as well as other items being identified as Elaine's. In 2015, Graeme Dwyer was convicted of her murder. The Gardaí, after looking into the similarities, like the closeness of where both women's cars were found, could not find any evidence to suggest Graeme Dwyer was involved in Ezra's murder. But it does make you think, if these items had never been found in the reservoir, would the assumption still be that Elaine had taken her own life? After Ezra's disappearance, her husband Oscar moved back to the UK with their little boy, so he could be closer to both families. It was important as well for Ezra's family to have their grandchild and nephew close to them. Berna continues her campaign to try and find her sister. Her heart breaks to this very day, not knowing what has happened to her. She's determined to find the answer, no matter how terrible. Her unwavering dedication to finding her only sister is amazing. She has dedicated her life to finding the truth of what happened and will not rest until she knows the truth. She believes something happened to her sister Ezra near her home in Clondalkin, ever before she got to Bray. Apart from the car being found in Bray, there is no evidence to suggest Ezra was ever in Bray herself that day. Bray has been the subject of so many searches, so you would assume if Ezra was there, some trace of her would have been found. In February of 2024, on the 13th anniversary of Ezra's disappearance, Berna appealed yet again for information on Ezra's whereabouts, describing the last 13 years as a never-ending nightmare, and saying that there has been no credible leads in all that time. Berna came to Ireland again to mark the anniversary, as she has done on many occasions over the years. Retracing Ezra's last movements and handing out missing posters. This year in particular, it was going to be a hard visit, as Berna had just found out that the CCTV footage showing Ezra's car entering Bray, which had been sent off to be enhanced in the UK in the hope the person driving it could be identified, had failed to yield any results. It was always too blurry to make out who was driving the car, and the enhancement unfortunately made no difference. Berna is convinced whoever is at the wheel of the car is responsible for her sister's disappearance. On finding out this devastating news, Berna, obviously upset, said, "It's so hard to keep going at this moment. We were really pinning our hopes on that footage. It was all we had to go on. I just don't know where we go from here because nothing has changed since the day Ezra disappeared 13 years ago. I've been to Ireland so many times, but this trip is going to be the hardest after this setback. But what else can I do? It's a horrible trip, but I have to keep doing it. I'd feel guilty if I didn't. And I know someone out there knows what happened to Ezra. The whole family is stuck in limbo. We just want closure, good or bad, so we can move on with our lives." She went on to say, "It's heartbreaking coming over and then heading back empty-handed. We just need to know what happened to her," she said. "Unfortunately, we are getting nothing from anybody."
"It's hard coming and it's even harder going back. She's my flesh and blood. She's my only sister. She would have done the same if it was me in the other shoe, you know. I know she would have done. I can't. Yeah, I'm torturing myself maybe, but how can I let it go? It's impossible to let go. With no closure, you can't let it go."
In conclusion, the disappearance of Ezra Irwin on February the 23rd, 2011 remains a deeply troubling mystery. Ezra, a 38-year-old mother from Clondalkin, vanished under circumstances that continue to puzzle both her family and investigators. Despite extensive searches and multiple appeals from her loved ones, no significant leads have emerged regarding her whereabouts since she was last seen driving away from her home in Bray. Her case starkly highlights the profound impact a missing person's case has on their loved ones, and also serves as a reminder of the critical need for ongoing attention and resources in unresolved cases. As the years pass, the uncertainty surrounding Ezra's fate underscores the importance of keeping Ezra's name out there in the public in an effort to bring closure to her case. The hope remains that fresh information will eventually surface, providing the answers that Ezra's family desperately seeks. Until then, the story of Ezra Irwin continues to be a poignant example of loss and unresolved grief, like so many of the other cases I've covered. As always, if you have any information, no matter how insignificant, on Ezra's disappearance, please contact the Clondalkin Garda Station on 01-666-7600. So guys, that's it for today's episode of the Ireland Crimes and Mysteries podcast. Again, thanks for your listenership. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and hit that auto download so you never miss an episode. Until the next time, keep your eyes open and your mind curious. This podcast has been compiled from information gathered in the public sphere, like news articles, documentaries, and open source material that can be found on the web. Everything in this podcast is alleged unless a conviction has taken place.
You've been listening to Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. Join Newells for another episode coming real soon. And keep up to date by following our social media sites, our YouTube channel, and our website, islandcrimesandmysteries.ie.